Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Oh, what is happening? Dan is on leave. It's James Thompson joining me for this Six Colors podcast. Hi.
I am Dan's understudy. I don't know. Yes, it's me.
Interesting. It's I talked to you for a thing that'll be coming out on Monday on Upgrade earlier this week about development, and I just wanted to share with you that I am now truly an Apple developer. You want to know why?
Do tell.
Well, as I wrote about on Six Colors, I built a little script that queries the WeatherKit API, the WeatherKit REST API, and pulls down a forecast, and it's really fun. And yesterday at about noon, it stopped working for everybody. The entire REST API just ceased to function. And there's no information from Apple about what's going on and if we need to change something or if something changed or if we're just being bad or whether they took it down to fix something. It's just gone. It returns an authorization failure for the code that hasn't changed in weeks. And I thought, well, this is the true Apple developer experience, right? Is a whole bunch of people posting in the developer forum saying, did this stop working just for me? And everybody else replying, oh, no, it doesn't work. And what's happening now? And everybody looks around and goes, we don't know. And that's it. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, that is kind of the experience. Yeah. I'm currently waiting for App Review to get back to me on something. And yeah, there is a certain amount of... shall we say black box around some of this stuff. Yeah, it is kind of annoying when something stops working and then you go and look at the status board and it says everything is working perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I hear you're becoming a hardware developer now.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, well, no, I'm not. I'm not becoming a hardware developer. But I have a project that I will probably write about at some point because as somebody pointed out, If I do something that's vaguely tech related at all, and I have a website, I should probably about tech related things. I should probably use it as fodder, right?
Yeah, I mean, what is the point of doing anything if it can't become a podcast or an article?
Right. So, what happened is I made the mistake of reading Daring Fireball. As you do, you don't do it. It's dangerous site. In March, Gruber linked to, I got to take a couple of leaps here. In March, Gruber linked to a post by John Calhoun, who is the developer of many classic, I believe, classic Mac apps, Glider being...
Glider was the one that came to mind.
Is the one that he is famous for, which is a great game from back in the day. And he built a little... It's like a little acrylic thing with an e-ink screen that's a status board, but it looks like a classic Mac. The acrylic thing looks like a classic Mac, and then the screen is in there, and then he populated it all with classic Mac icons and things, except it's doing things like telling him whether it's time to take out the trash and whose birthday it is and what the weather forecast is, and what the moon phase is, and stuff like that. And he built it all to sort of ape the classic Mac interface, even though it's not that. And I thought that was interesting, and I've always been fascinated by ePaper, and also the whole thing's done in Python, which I learned last year. And so I was intrigued by this. It's like, or e-ink. E-ink is really a cool technology that doesn't have that many... it's a very weird niche technology because it isn't backlit, so you gotta. But it's reflective and it's very low power, and but it doesn't. It takes time to refresh it, and like there are all these weird things about it. But it's cool, and I've had candles, and so I've always been interested in it. So I read the John Calhoun post, which is called System 6. It's adorable, and he links to a different project called E-Ink Calendar, which is by this guy. Named Lewis, 13 bytes, in Germany, and he made a Portal, the video game Portal themed desk calendar using e-ink, and that project he's got a 3D printed shell, and he's got the software, and he's got the specific display that he bought, And I thought, that sounds like, because John Calhoun's thing is like, I had to get five of them, and they're laser cut acrylic, and then I had to use this heat thing to get the acrylic warm enough that I could bend it in order to create a Mac with a stand. And I thought, wow, that's a long way to go. And honestly, I don't want to, I mean, as adorable as this little Mac accessory thing is, I don't think that's what I wanted to do. The portal themed disc calendar was actually more up my alley. So I dithered about it for a long time, because like I said, March. But on the 4th of July, actually, I remember the date because it was the 4th of July, I ordered the e-ink screen. You can't get a Raspberry Pi because of legacy nodes. Turns out,
indeed.
James, did you know Raspberry Pis are made up entirely of legacy nodes? And so they're not available, if people don't know this. Like, they're this great little computer that you can buy for $10 or whatever, or for $30, or there's different models. They're unavailable because the business model of Raspberry Pis involves cheap parts that it turns out everybody else will pay more for right now, because they are legacy nodes. They're the things that are in short supply. But I had one.
Presumably Tesla or somebody like that will pay more for whatever chip.
Well, anybody, right? Apple, your washing machine maker, whatever. Like, they all need these little parts. And that's the beauty of the Raspberry Pi. It's like, well, we use just these little component parts and it doesn't matter. Except. So I had a Raspberry Pi 3 laying around, and that was what this project was based on. I had it laying around because I was using it for fun. I did a retro video game console thing, although the truth is that a Mac can drive that just as well as a Raspberry Pi. And I hadn't built like a console and embedded it in there. And honestly, even if I did that, I'd probably use an old Mac Mini or something and do it that way at this point. So I it wasn't really getting a lot of use. And I thought, well, I'm just going to apply it to this project because I think this will be fun. So and you know this, as a veteran Alibaba product orderer, the company I bought this from is Waveshare, and they're in China. And they gave me a tracking number, but the tracking number is the tracking number in the U.S. Postal Service when it reaches the U.S. But then there's this void, which is somehow it will get from China to the U.S. with all of our other shipments in a drop ship kind of thing.
I bought, it was a replacement floppy drive for either an Atari ST or an Amiga. Mm-hmm. Because right at the start of the pandemic, I found two of them in a dump. And thought, well, I can bring these back to life and whatever. But it was a replacement floppy drive that you plugged USB sticks into, and then it emulated the old.
Like the one I've got for the Mac with my the SD card thing, yeah.
But that was one of these things where you order it, and then like 3 months later, it turns up at your door.
Right, because it's coming from China, and it's like it'll get there eventually. So it did show up. It showed up like last week, and I thought, oh, well, this is really exciting. I guess I have to do this now. And so, yeah, I've spent some time this week customizing, and that's the beauty of it being written in Python, is that there's some stuff where it's just like, if this had been, oh, well, this whole project requires you to know some language I didn't know, I'd be like, I'm less enthusiastic. But Python is like, not only have I learned how to use Python, but I have built all these scripts that do things in Python. So like, this guy's script uses webdav to get a calendar, or webcal to get a calendar and parse it. So if your calendar is on one of those servers, including a MobileMe, an iCloud calendar, it works. But my calendar is in Google Calendar, and it doesn't work with that. But I wrote a bot for the incomparable that queries a Google Calendar. And so I was able to use that code and change it a little bit. And I had to change the parsing and the output and stuff like that. And then a lot of it is just learning how the guy who built this thing set up how do you write something on the screen? It's very clever, because essentially what you do is there's an image that is a blank image, and then you tell Python to write things on it, and at the end you hand the image off to the e-ink parser, basically, that Waveshare provides, and say, draw this. And so once I got kind of accustomed to how that whole process works and looked at his code and figured it out, I started tearing it apart and putting it back together. And so my thing looks sort of like his thing, but very different. And it's got our calendar events, and there's a bunch of stuff that he had on there that I removed because I thought, I don't need that. I don't want that. And the one that I really like, and this was John Calhoun as a bit of an inspiration here. He has it that on his trash day, the trash can is full. And that's the day he needs to put out his trash bins, is because the trash can, the classic Mac trash can, is full. Well, for us, remembering that it's trash night is useful, but we have an alternating trash night. We have every other is either the bin with the paper in it or the bin with the containers in it, the glass and plastic. They're separate. We have two bins, two different recycle bins. So now, and that's we have it as recurring calendar events, ironically enough. It's actually in our calendar. It says trash night paper or trash night containers. So the script now identifies that event, doesn't show it in the calendar list, but it suppresses it. But instead, if it's Thursday, which is our trash day, it draws a little icon up by the big, like the date that's at the top of this thing. And that icon, I had to go find black and white icons yesterday, but now it draws, if it's paper and cardboard day, it draws an icon of a cardboard box and a piece of paper. And if it's containers day, it draws an icon with a couple of bottles. And that's the which one is it clue for us, which I think is really cool because I want this thing to be out in our kitchen where we can see like what's coming up and all that. And I also, the aforementioned weather kit thing, I also, it puts the weather forecast for the day on, which right now is static because a weather kit is broken. So, but other than that, it's going great. So it's been a lot of fun. It's just a fun little project. And I also got, okay, here's the hardware part is I used a service to 3D print. So the guy's open source project. Not John Calhoun, the German guy. His open source project includes a 3D file for the two pieces of plastic that he kind of used to mount this thing and make a stand. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I thought, well, you know, a bare screen doesn't get me anywhere. It does need to be kind of in a container. And John Calhoun's thing intimidated me because it was laser cut and then you have to order five and then you have to use a heater thing to bend it. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I thought about emailing John Calhoun and saying, you have any extras? I'll just take one. And I might. I might do that if I wanted to do this project.
I was thinking you should email Glenn because doesn't he have a laser cutter?
I think he does. I think I could probably email Glenn too. But if John Calhoun had to buy five.
True.
Then there's probably some. Anyway, so I found a service called CraftCloud. CraftCloud3D.com. And it's an aggregator of commercial 3D printers. So
right.
The idea is you upload your 3D file and choose your materials and level of quality. And it gives you a bunch of quotes automatically from people. And it's like, here's the cheap one, and here's the fast one, and here's the list of all 15. So I did that on the 4th of July as well. And I ordered the plastic, and that also came like a week ago. Which is fun, because I'd never 3D printed anything even remotely ever.
Yeah, I keep looking at 3D printers. It's one of those things where every time I look at it, it's like, well, the resolution's not quite there. You know, you can see all the lines or you can see whatever. And it's like, well, maybe if I wait another 5 years, I'll check back in and I'll see what it looks like. And this is a process, of course, which I have repeated for the last, whatever, 15 years.
Yeah.
But there is something kind of vaguely tempting about it. Like I occasionally fall down into 3D printing TikTok where somebody is like uploaded a sort of stop motion thing of their printer making something. But I mean, I'm not 100% sure that it's something that I would use a lot.
Right.
So I don't. But yes, I like the idea of having somebody else do it for
me. Yeah, well that was the idea here. So this one I cheaped out a little bit and I didn't get the like sanded finished version. And as a result I had to sand it. I had to look up, can you sand? And they're like, yeah, you can sand it. So I have my sandpaper out and I need to do one before I finalize it and everything. I'll have to do that. And scrape out some of the like parts that are a little blobby, that are like a little messy. Which apparently that's just a thing with 3D printing. So it was a fun thing to try. So it's in process. It's not done. I have to decide other stuff to put on the screen too. I haven't figured that. I actually want to draw. I think I might draw the weather forecast as a chart, like I have in my other places. If WeatherKit ever comes back, but I have to figure out the right format because this is a one bit display, right? It's literally black or white. Actually, it's technically it's black, white, or red. Those are your choices. So I could have something light up in red if I really wanted to. But I have to figure out what other data I want to put on it, but I think it would be fun. My other thing that I did this week regarding this project that is terrifying is I bought a soldering iron. I have a strict no soldering policy in my life. I never want to solder anything. I'm terrified by it.
Well, I mean, you need to go down the full keyboard.
I don't want to. That's the thing. I don't want to have to solder anything. I'll let Mike do that. I don't want to solder anything. So why did I get a soldering iron? Well, it turns out one of the principles of 3D printing is heat inset screws, because a 3D printed thing is not necessarily the best for anchoring things with screws. So what you do is you get these little brass screw inserts, and you put them on the plastic, and you touch a hot soldering iron to the brass thing, and it heats up, melts the plastic, sinks down into the plastic until it's flush, and then you let go, and it cools, and now you've got something you can actually screw a screw into. So I bought those. I bought for $25, I think. I bought a cheap soldering iron and a bunch of brass inserts, and we're going to give it a try and see what happens.
Well, you're not breaking your soldering rule. You've just got a soldering iron,
right?
But you're not actually soldering.
That's it. Exactly right. The soldering iron was not banned. It was just the act of soldering things. So instead, and again, is it silly that I spent $30 on these? Well, yes, but if I do another 3D print of something, I guess the next frontier for me is going to be to design my own 3D printing things. And I think, honestly, I think that's where having a 3D printer probably makes a difference, because you can run a, you know, with this service, you do a design and you send it off, and like 3 weeks later you get what you printed and you're like, oh no, this isn't it. And then you repeat it again for another 3 weeks. It's like, that's not, you kind of need to have faster turnaround than that.
Yeah. When you've made a Stonehenge type sizing error.
Reference acknowledged. Anyway, it's fun. It's fun. It's a fun little project. This is the equivalent. I keep thinking about my dad. My dad would always he was very handy, and he would always have things that he was working on. And I was thinking about that it's like, this is my computer nerd equivalent of that, which is, it's a project for fun that involves tech things, but is not really, you know, part of my job. Even if I write a story about it or talk about it on this podcast, it's not really part of my job, but it's just fun. And it has been fun, I have to say. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think I was thinking about this, and I was trying to come up with an equivalent. And there are a few things that I've done. I think I've talked before about the Mr. FPGA, which is like a little gaming emulation system where you buy basically an FPGA fairly inexpensive development board, and then there's a whole kind of open source community around that that's built like memory boards and IO boards, and you can either like get the bare boards or you can have them pre-assembled, and you, at whatever level of wanting to construct this thing you can do. And then there's the whole software side of people writing emulators or simulators or however you want to call them on the thing. But I think like my day-to-day thing is like creating stuff, you know, the sort of the writing the code and the starting with a blank canvas, which I guess is what you've got with your e-ink page. It's a case of, I'm doing that already in my day job, so I'm not sure that I want, I like, certainly not at a software level. And I'm pretty bad with hardware, it has to be said. I did enough woodworking and, you know, building things out of acrylic or whatever at school, in all my classes there. And I've never really got into building physical stuff.
Yeah. I thought me neither. And the 3D printing, the funny thing is that if in the long run, what I was actually thinking is in the long run, what I might do is something like buy a picture frame.
Yeah.
And put it in the picture frame and then and find a way to basically like tape the Raspberry Pi to the back. Like, it doesn't have to be this plastic shell. But since the guy created it, I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to write, like, for $20, I can just order this shell and it's for this project and we'll start there. Right. It was like, well, this is the easy part. But I am also uneasy with some of that out in the physical world stuff. And the blank canvas of the e-ink is where things get drawn based on what I write in code. I like that. That's really the joy to me, is that I could create this little thing. And I am excited about ambient information, right? That's one of the things that I really love, is that there's so much information on the internet. And I feel like it's not quite like if you have to pick up your phone or whatever in order to get that information, you've already failed, right? You blew it, in Steve Jobs terms. But I feel like that a little bit. Like, that's why I have the time and temperature on a Lemaitre time, which is that weird device that it's just a, well, you can, I'll put a link in whatever show notes we're doing for this, to the Lemaitre time. But it's like a little clock that goes under my TV. It's a little box and it's got the time and the temperature, and the temperature's coming from my weather station. It's like, that's better than having to look at the temperature on my phone. Because it's just ambient. And I like that idea of having it be like, I could open my phone and launch a weather app. But if I walk into the kitchen and there's a thing that says, today is July 22nd and it's going to be 75 degrees and here's the calendar for the next 4 days and you need to take out the trash. And right, like, it's just kind of there. Not only does it feel super futuristic, but I like the idea that it's, I can control it is fun, but also that it's tapping all those data sources on the internet and then giving me something super simple instead of going to a half dozen web pages in order to look up all the details.
I mean, it feels a bit like the sort of the natural extension of your menu bar stuff, because it's kind of that same ambient thing.
It's the
that
same
you don't
code.
Want to launch an app.
And my widget, and my weather widget too. It's like that too. I mean, I think that's the source of all of my interest in this, is this idea of simplifying this information, which you could take it down to, you could look this up on a web page. You could, but why?
Yes. I mean, like, some of it is, as you say, it's the fun of actually making the thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff that I do, it's like, certainly with dice and well, other apps that we can't talk about yet, it's very much the sort of, how would I do this? Like, I don't know how to do this. I'm a reasonably intelligent person. I can figure this out. I can work out how to do this thing. And then when you actually make it work, there is a certain level of achievement, which I think is why a lot of programmers do what they do. I think you're kind of firmly in the programmer developer club at this point. I don't know if there's an official ceremony where there's a sort of sword or some kind of pledge, but yeah, I think you are there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an amateur, but it's been fun to play with this stuff, and I think that's part of
it. I think it's like, you know, if you write things, you're a writer. So if you're programming things, you're a programmer.
Sure.
But yes, the frustrations of dealing with, well, as soon as you start talking to other things. Yeah, that's when it starts to become a problem, which is why most of my apps don't, to be honest.
It is. I mean, although you do, for a person who makes their living doing development, 100% of your living.
Yes.
You do a surprising amount of, I think, of kind of following your bliss in terms of, oh, let's explore this thing, instead of it being like, I've made a calculation that this will make me money, because some of the things you've done definitely will not pass that test.
Oh, I think that is absolutely the case. And perhaps somebody else in this household might make that comment to me occasionally too. Mm-hmm. I think, yes, that especially since I have been doing this for 30 years. You know, you have to do things that actually interest you in order to, you know, keep your brain working. Because if literally all I had done in the last 30 years was maintain a calculator, I think I would have stopped by now. Mm. But, you know, like just the sort of the dice stuff, that came out of, well, you know the route that followed. But it started with rumors of Apple doing a 3D headset. And me saying, I should probably learn how to do 3D graphics. And that was 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. We still don't have the headset.
I need it for my work.
About it.
I need it for my work. The best way to learn is to build a game inside my About box.
Yes. And then spin that into a Dice app. And to be fair, the Dice app has made more money than the About screen made.
That's my magic touch. That's my magic touch in identifying a market for you. That was the beauty of that.
Yes.
There was no market identifiable for driving a truck around in an About box.
I think the Dice app has actually done surprisingly well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think for the amount of work I've put into mm-hmm. it, I've broken even.
Well, and you keep on being like, oh, I'm going to design even more dice. But again, that's part of the combination of making your job something you want to do, that you have fun designing dice, right? Like, that's
yes,
an outlet for you.
To the point where I start looking at the resin dice molds on AliExpress and thinking, apparently all you need is like a sort of pressure cooker and, you know, then it sort of spirals out of control.
No,
I decide not to do that.
The best place to make your dice is in your app.
Yeah, physical products are difficult. Well, not that I would ever sell anything. But
so how do you, when you're designing those apps, what tools do you use to make your 3D dice?
The main thing that I use, well, there's a couple of things. The software-wise, there's an app called Substance Painter, where you can basically load in a blank, untextured 3D model, and then you can sit and either, if you're a proper artist, you can sit and paint it, you know, with your whatever digital paint tools that you're using. But for me, it's mostly a case of like, I think, well, I would like to do a dice that is like this, and then I'll try and you can sort of do a lot of sort of generated textures, and it's got sort of kind of like Photoshop filters that you can put in, and then you can export that out in the format of a texture that I can drop pretty straight into my app, and some of that stuff is. Generally, every time I try and make a new dice theme, it's because I'm trying to use a different part of something like one of Apple's 3D APIs or something. Like, so one of the themes that I did recently, it's like the texture kind of morphs. It's like a color, like there's colored lights moving inside it. And that was done using like Sprite Kit, which is one of Apple's 2D kind of things, and it's like you're basically running a program on the texture of the outside of the dice, and most of that stuff will run on the actual graphics card. So some of it is just like, I would like to make a thing that looks like X, or I would like to put a small duck inside a dice, so
right.
I will go looking at duck 3D models on the internet for several days. That was one of my discoveries, is like, if you need a 3D model of a duck, it is generally not worth making your own, because you can go to websites and you can buy, you know, royalty-free rights to a small 3D rubber duck model for like $3.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a perfectly good model. And if you think, for whatever amount you think your hourly rate should be, you can do it for less than that. Go for it. But there's just so much stuff out there where I should actually either hire people to make stuff for me or buy things off the shelf.
Yeah, I definitely came to that realization too, that there's so much stock art out there, like for my trash icons. Like, I was able to in a minute find black and white icons of recycling items.
Yes.
In one image with like eight of them, two of which were what I wanted, and bought that for very little money and didn't have to sweat it and didn't have to search around. And it was like, this is great. This is exactly what I want. And I've had that with other stuff too, where even commissions. I mean, that's the other funny thing is like, and I know you've done some of this with your pandas especially.
Yeah.
But art commissions, like once you get out of the mindset, which is like, well, I can't pay somebody to do art. Like that's not a thing people do. That's a thing that big companies with art staffers do. And like if you get over it and say, oh, actually, for a few $100s, I can get this piece of completely original artwork directly to my specifications. It's like that was a transformative moment for me where I just think to myself, oh, well, if I want that, I should just pay somebody who's good at art to make it for me. And they get money, which is great because the artist should get paid and I get the thing that I want. Like, why would I not do that? And so that was transformative for me, too.
I mean, that was the thing with my pandas. It was like I had liked the work of David Lanham, who had done a whole bunch of sticker sets for things like Facebook and, you know, the kind of like stickers that you'll put in your messages.
Right.
And I'd liked all the stuff he'd done, and he'd done a red panda and he'd done like dogs and whatever, but he hadn't done a panda. And I just had this light bulb moment of like, what if I paid him to do that?
Mm.
And then I'll just include it in my calculator for some reason. And I mean, the reason is I wanted panda stickers for my messages. And, you know, it was as simple as that. But I thought, well, and I think other people should benefit from this as well. I actually had somebody mailed me and they said that they hadn't been really close with their mother kind of growing up or something. And in her later years, they had bonded over sending back and forth my panda stickers. I might be completely misquoting him here. Mm. But, you know, it was kind of like that something that I indirectly had made had improved somebody's relationship with their mother. And I thought, wow, that's kind of like way deeper than I thought that this would go. But, yeah, I just like pandas. And the ability to pay money to people and have them make things is really good.
Yeah,
I recommend paying artists.
That's exactly it. It's funny in the D&D world now. Apparently, it is much more of a thing that it's sort of culturally been. And I think artists have discovered that this is a great way for them to make money too, which is great because again, artists need the work. A lot of artists are struggling and they don't get enough payment and they don't get enough work. And one of the places where I've discovered this real renaissance in original artwork is people getting commissions of their characters from their D&D party. And I've done that a couple of times now. And it's delightful, right? Because you create these characters and, you know, and you envision them. And you've got somebody, after an artist does this a little while, the artist knows kind of what the tropes are, and you give them a little personality detail, and then you get this amazing piece of artwork of your characters. Now, the other way to go is to have James build your characters as Lego.
Yes.
Mm.
I still have a lot of gray bricks in the cupboard from all that Lego construction I did back in the TPK days.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's I think it's fun, and I think it's really nice to have this stuff. And I think part of my thinking is it's like, oh, I can't afford to get, you know, Jen Bartel or, you know, Amanda Connor or some artist like that to do it. And in fact, they probably do not have anything like the time,
right,
or inclination to draw some random thing for me. But, you know, just because an artist isn't like sort of doing the covers of Marvel comics or whatever does not mean that they are not good artists. And
right,
there's just tons of people out there. And, you know, I think there is difficulty in like finding people who have both the artistic skill and then the free time
right
to actually work on stuff, because you know the good people obviously become busy, but yeah,
there's just an infinite supply of talented artists. I think you just have to find them. It may not be the A-list top stars, obviously, but there's so many good artists who, and I've definitely found people who specialize in things like D&D commissions. But yeah, they come from all over. I asked around for the artwork that we commissioned for The Incomparable last year. I ended up using Katie Shuttleworth, who is a friend and works in animation, and did a bunch of book covers for friends of mine. And her art is adorable, and it was exactly the tone I wanted for that piece with the Incomparable robot and the Zeppelin and Skeletor and Lefsnauth. You had to be there.
But again, and you're also delightful. You're also now the new Jeremy Bird because emoji.
Well, yeah. So I wanted a Skeletor emoji in the style of Apple's emojis, and I wanted a Tony Sindelar reference acknowledged emoji in the style of Apple's emoji. And I went, fortunately, I know the guy who founded Emojipedia. And so Jeremy Bird turned me on to his artist, who does a lot of those perspective kind of like, this is what this emoji would look like. He doesn't work inside, obviously. The Apple have their own staff of people who build their emoji designs for them, but he is on the outside and works freelance and has this history building emoji art. And so I went to him, and again, the same thing where I basically said, if I give you, you know, a few hundred dollars, whatever his rate was, can you make me these two custom emoji? And he said, absolutely, I can. And I'm very happy with the result. There's a Skeletor that looks as if it could be part of Apple's emoji set, except it's Skeletor. And Tony, which is literally just a nerd with a tie and glasses pointing as if to say, I acknowledge your reference, which I love that. I think next stop is me putting that in an emoji proposal, right? Which is the acknowledgement of references is a very important thing that should be an emoji. I don't think that's going to make it, but that's okay.
I was one of the readers of the proposal to create the Scottish flag emoji. I think Jeremy just wanted a Scottish person to have read the document. So if you look up the original Unicode proposal thing, my name is in there. I had absolutely nothing to do with it, and I have absolutely zero power over what emojis get created, but it is just nice that I have like this incredibly tangential relationship to a Scottish flag emoji.
That's fun. That's good. I'm glad you were the token Scott there.
Yes. I don't know if it was like me and Chris Finn read it or something like that, because there are only two Scottish people apparently,
and I've been on a podcast with both of them this week.
Yes.
Chris Finn was on Clockwise this week too, which is of course because Dan isn't doing it, and I'm filling in for Dan because Dan and his wife are having a baby. I don't know if they had the baby or not, honestly. We haven't heard.
I like to think that we would have heard if it had happened, but also if it had happened, I suspect we might not be the highest thing on the priority list.
There's the time it takes. Like after a baby, you don't have kids, so you don't know, but I'll tell you that like after a baby, there is that time. I mean, you text your parents or whatever, but like there's time where you're spending. Yeah, you're doing the bonding time, and it's exhausting. Also, I don't want to assume that people have a baby right away, because we were in labor. I mean, oh boy, it was a couple of days. So I don't know. I think the baby is on the way, but beyond that, we don't know. And then Dan's just. I like how Dan did it. He said, "This is my last day, and then I'll be back after Labor Day," which is great. Like it's a very how European of him to take August off is what I'm saying.
Yeah. But yes, I suspect I'll be bouncing around various bits of the internet, filling in for Dan.
Yeah. It takes a village to fill in for Dan, it turns out.
Yep.
Well, thank you for being on. Maybe I can get you back sometime in August for another one of these. Cause I literally just don't know how I'm filling all these Fridays without Dan around.
He is irreplaceable.
I have next week lined up, but after that, it's still a gaping void. So get ready for that text message from me.
Well, maybe the next time I come on, there will have been actual news in the preceding week.
We can only hope.
There hasn't been.
Did you hear the WeatherKit REST API is down? That's the news.
Is it still down,
big
though?
News.
I mean, like, at the time you listen to this, it could be back up.
It could be.
Who knows?
All right. Well, thank you, James.
A pleasure.
And thank you to everybody out there for listening. I will be back next week with somebody. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.